It's time for Hartley's CAT Scan, a weekly podcast featuring the who's who of your Prince George Cougars.
And welcome to CAT Scan. It's brought to you by Integris. Local speaks louder than words. Mitchell Carapita is the Prince George Cougars athletic trainer. Your first season with the team, your first season in the WHL, you know, how so far has it been? Roughly around the halfway mark, a little bit more, as you have now adjusted to the WHL and life in it.
It's been great, honestly, so far. I think you hit the nail on the head with the adjustment period. That's always the hardest part, but you know, once you get through training camp and preseason and meet all the players and the staff and we get some chemistry going, we get the ball rolling. It's a lot smoother in the season, and overall, it's a fun time.
So you are relatively young, real young, to be into this business. What made you say, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to be an athletic trainer, and I want to get to the WHL, and I'm sure you have goals to get higher.
Oh, yeah. Great question. Well, I was a kid growing up in small town Saskatchewan, so I was always into sports. And my
small town is?
Yorkton.
Yorkton, okay.
Actually, yeah. On a farm outside of Yorkton.
Yorkton. So is there a small place outside of Yorkton that nobody's heard of that it was, or is it just a farm?
Officially, it's Jedburgh, Saskatchewan.
Jedburgh, Saskatchewan, population of what, 6, 8, 10?
I think 10 was the last time I counted. Right, There's more buildings than people, I know that for sure.
Okay, yeah.
So my first exposure to athletic therapists was our local Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League teams, the Yorkton Terriers, Melville Millionaires, the Highway 10 rivalry. So I used to go to games as a kid, and I was also a Rough Rider fan, of course, growing up. So hockey and football were kind of my two big.
So you're used to a lot of disappointment, you know, being with Rough Riders and Saskatchewan and all that, right?
Hey, some would say the valleys make the mountain peaks that much sweeter.
Right, yeah. Okay, so growing up in Yorkton, and then all of a sudden you go to school. Where's that at?
Mount Royal University.
Mount Royal.
In Calgary.
So, yeah, okay, so you graduate high school, and this is, you know, you're in high school, junior high. You sort of think this is what you want to do. This has been a long time desire.
I think it was around grade 10 or 11 I started looking into more stuff, careers, and that's when they start pushing you to figure out what you want to do post-secondary. I knew I always wanted to go to school. The first thing I remember looking at was athletic therapy. There was a few other things, armed forces, nursing at one point, but I just always wanted to work in sports, and I was always into science and fitness, so it was just a natural fit.
Just give us an outline, day-to-day, of your job. So let's start on a non-game day where there is a practice. You know, give us a rundown morning till night what you do, and then give us a rundown on a game day. It's a Friday at home, for example, what you do. So let's start with a non-game day.
Yeah, so our practice days, it's not too much unlike a regular job. I'll show up at the rink about 9 a.m., make sure everything's clean and set up for the players, fill up the water bottles, set up the bench for practice. Be there ready for the guys, whatever they need, see how they're feeling when they come in. And if anyone's sick or injured, they'll usually come in a little early, and I'll spend some time with them to see what the plan is for the day, if they can get on the ice or do some rehab with me. During practice, I'm sort of between my office on the bench, either doing some admin work or working with guys who aren't on the ice. So if anyone does get hurt in practice, that's what I'm there for. After practice, often on practice days, we'll also have a workout before practice. So I'm the one who puts that together, sets it up. I love being in the gym with the guys on the floor and seeing if they need any tips or help or how they're feeling with things. After practice, it's a whole lot of cleaning up, tidying up. Yeah. Teenage boys can be pretty messy, I know, because I'm not too far off myself.
I was going to say, how about the relationship you would have with the team, because you're not that much older. Then, what are you, in your mid-20s?
I'm 23.
Yeah, I was going to say, 23, and, you know, you're looking after, you know, 16 to 20-year-olds, so you must have quite a bond there.
Yeah, definitely, it's great. I mean, I'm a Western Canada kid myself, so especially with the Sask guys on the team, a lot of us had pretty much the exact same childhood, so it's easy to get along with them. I can relate to what they're going through, and, I mean, other than being an elite hockey player or elite athlete in general, I wasn't too different from them, so they got a lot of trust in me that, you know, I want what's best for them, and I trust them that they're honest with me and open with how they're feeling, how they're doing. So, you know, it definitely makes it a lot easier.
All right. Now on game day, sort of take us through that.
Yeah. So game day, it's similar but different. Generally, it's just a whole lot longer. So same thing, I'll get to the rink, make sure the bench is ready for morning skate for us and our snack tables and Gatorades all mixed for them. So we'll have a quick morning skate. I'll probably do some treatment for half an hour after, see how guys are feeling. We might have a workout set up in the gym for guys that aren't playing so they can still, you know, get their bodies working, make sure they're not losing. Little break in the afternoon. I usually try to get a workout in myself, and then 3-4 o'clock guys start rolling in for the game, and it's kind of similar to the morning, just being there if they need anything, if they want me to help loosen up some muscles or get some knots in their out of their back, and then on the bench for the game.
Are you a player yourself?
Hockey, not so much. I grew up on the slough on our farm. I remember me and my brother used to go shovel it off in minus 30 and
right.
Maybe play some shinny at the local little town, but never played full minor hockey or certainly anything close to what these guys are at. But my main sports were just the ones in school, volleyball, basketball, baseball, kind of go with the season.
You sort of think, wow, you know, here I am in the WHL with a very key role. A lot of people rely on me, you know, and you come in with not a lot of experience getting this opportunity where maybe a lot of other guys have to pay, I don't want to say a lot more dues, but they may be a little bit older by the time they get these kind of jobs.
Yeah, it's been a dream come true. My long-term goal was working in the WHL. I certainly expected to have to put in a bit more time in Junior A. But last year with the Spruce Kings was my first time working for a hockey team, so got most of the hard lessons learned last year, and this one's been a bit more smooth.
What are the main differences being the athletic trainer for the Prince George Spruce Kings at the Junior A level and the Prince George Cougars at the Major Junior WHL level? Are there any differences, and if so, what are they?
In my experience, especially just since they're in the same city, that's made them feel a lot whole similar. I still go to the same Costco and the same pharmacies to pick up things. But in terms of the job itself, I was always doing treatments and injuries and rehab. That's always the main focus of my job. The one key difference for me was last year I had a lot more responsibilities with equipment and laundry. On the road, I was the only trainer traveling myself, so I was sharpening skates before the game. This year, I'm fortunate to have Dane and Liam who help us out around the rink, and so I don't have to worry about that too much. The new thing for me this year is the strength and conditioning with the players in the gym. So, I have experience working people back from injuries. That's just the nature of my degree and my background, but that was its own learning curve this fall of getting a group of 20 guys in the gym, testosterone running, and making some sense of the chaos.
Yeah, so you have a couple of helpers, and what are their roles specifically? Tell us who they are and exactly what they do for you.
Yeah, so Dane Englehart is our equipment manager, so he's a big help. He's at the rink even more than me. His main job, sharpening skates, fixing equipment, getting guys comfortable if they got some new gear, they need something tweaked. Laundry is never-ending cycle multiple times a day. He's got an assistant, Liam McGrath, who does very similar things. They also help take care of the visiting teams when they're in town. That's the one thing that's new in Major Junior compared to Junior A is there's a lot more responsibilities on the home team to provide a lot more and be good hosts because teams have very long road trips and, you know, there's no sense of people hauling things all over the provinces if the home team can provide some things themselves. So we've also got lots of little stick boys that help fill up water bottles and run errands for us and ice, and, you know, it's the unsung people behind the scenes, but they really do a lot to keep the ship running smoothly.
And what if some, you know, young kid or young player wants to, you know, be a stick boy or be part of a team or something like that? Is there what kind of a process would there be, you know, to try and latch on to a PG Cougars in a non-player role?
Yeah, that's honestly something I wish I did myself more at the time. I did a lot of internet research on athletic therapy in my job, but didn't have a whole lot of hands-on experience when I was a kid. So I'd just say, hang around the rink, you know, see someone in a uniform, ask if you can see what we're doing and lend a hand here and there. We've had, I remember last year with the Spruce Kings, some guys even younger than 10 come around and, you know, they do a really good job. So, you know, just be around, learn as much as you can. That goes for most things in life, and especially working behind the scenes in hockey.
Prior to Christmas, Prince George Cougars had a rough road trip. They'd lost 5 straight on the road after starting off having a really good road record. Now, what really wasn't reported, and I know people don't want to look for excuses and things like that because things didn't go very well, but there was the flu that went through the team. Sort of tell us about that.
Yeah, since that, I usually like to keep a tight lip on those kinds of things, but since it was in the media and on Facebook, I'm happy to talk about it. So yeah, there was a flu going around on a road trip, which started with a couple guys, and you know, then they'd be healthy a few days later, but then you know, 2 became 4, and 4 became 6, and became 8. So, and we had a short lineup to begin with on the bus. I think there was only 21 or 22 guys. So, you throw an injury and some illness out there, and you know, even the guys in the lineup aren't feeling great. That certainly makes it tough to win. But you know, at the end of the day, we have a job to go town to town and in every rink and do the best we can to get wins. That's as a staff, as a player. So, we just
on
try
that
to fight
5-game trip, was there a sense of, we just get this over with? Not just because the team wasn't playing as well as they can, but because, hey, they just want to get home. They're sick. They're tired. They're injured. You know, whether they can play or not is up in the air. Could you sense that at all?
Yeah, towards the end, like going back, mentioning, you know, adjustments in the fall, I was feeling really good with the job and with the team in October, November. It feels like we were in a groove, and then December going on that road trip, and you know, more the injuries and illness were stacking up, and so were the losses. So definitely think Christmas was a good break for us, and be good to hit the reset button here.
Right. How much say, if any, do you have if a player plays? In other words, you know, he's iffy. He has an injury, and you know, you and Mark get together, Mark Lamb, the head coach and GM. Is your opinion the final? How does that all work?
Well, ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm in charge of the medical for the team. So, you know, if I am convinced that some guy can't play for whatever reason, he's at a really high risk of getting injury and being out long term, I do have the final say. But the way I like to look at it is everybody who has an opinion, that opinion matters. So what Mark and the coaching staff feel is the best for us on the lineup. If putting this guy in is worth the risk, even though he might get hurt, maybe we don't need him that night. If the player feels physically ready, and even more importantly, mentally ready to get in the game, we have a great extended healthcare team with our docs and dentists, and I always ask for their opinion. You know, I'm kind of a jack of all trades, but they're specialists at what they do. So, you know, everyone's opinion is important. So we try to bring all that information together and then come up with a final decision.
Between your one season with the Prince George Spruce Kings and your half season or so with the Prince George Cougars, has there been a situation where you have deemed, no, the player should not be going, and the player politely is disagreeing with you, and you don't have to mention who the players are or whatever, but if that's been the case, I'd like an example of how that sort of came about and whether that player ended up playing or not.
Yeah, there's a few of those last year. One I remember.
So this is with the Spruce Kings.
With Spruce Kings last year, I remember really early on, guy got blindsided, hit to the head, looked super woozy, wobbly coming off the ice. So that to us, that's red flags that you know they may have a head injury. It's best to sit them out and get them checked out by a doctor. But player insists he's fine. 30 seconds later, looks fine. 30 minutes later, coaches are asking me tough questions. The players ask me tough questions. And at the time, that was, you know, one of my first big injuries with the team. So it was certainly tough. It's as the seasons have gone on last year, this year, you see a lot more things. And, you know, you start to tell the difference between when, you know, this is something guys can shake off, when this is something that it's best for their health and safety that they take a break. So, those conversations are never easy, but you know, I feel as the months go by and I'm getting more games in my belt that those decisions come a little easier, but it's always
right.
Tough.
And does the player ever win those battles, if we want to call them that, or ultimately do you and or the coaching staff say, it's too bad you're not playing?
You know, depending on the context, I can be a softie and a bit of a pushover with the guys, but, you know, when it comes to the big stuff, the, you know, life over limb, there's more to your youth than a junior hockey or a game. If there's 5 minutes left in the game and this guy might hurt himself more going out there, it's probably best to call it a day and we'll try again next time. So,
what about during the game? A player gets injured temporarily or not. I'm not talking about a major injury where it's obvious the guy's going to be out for quite some time, but you know, he may get injured in the first period and is pushing to get back into the game. How is that decision all made?
Yeah, I'll try to check it out as quick as I can. You know, ideally on a practice day, I've got 20, 30 minutes to spend with guys, but you know, during the game, that clock's ticking. So usually check out the injury for a few minutes, see what we think it is. Try some really quick treatment, ice, Advil, something to make them feel a little better, tape it up. And then I always want to see how they are on the ice between whistles or before the period starts. Get them on the ice, see that they can skate, see that they can stick handle before you throw them into a full-fledged game. Because, you know, you can take your time when you're skating on the ice by yourself, but when there's five guys on the other team trying to run you over, you don't have that luxury, so... Always try to make sure the guys are comfortable, and we take it step by step so they know that they're ready to play.
Right. What kind of relationship do you have with the players? Do you consider yourself a friend, and especially since the age is so close, or do you feel because of the job and how important it is, you have to keep somewhat of a professional relationship so that when you make a tough decision, you're not doing it as a friend?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely important to be professional at all times, keep that distance. Fortunately, you know, with my background, when I was at Mount Royal doing this as an internship, we worked with student athletes. I was the same age as them. Sometimes I was even younger than them. So, you know, this age difference in junior hockey isn't something totally new to me. I try to be friendly, but, you know, not their friend per se. I always want to be approachable, and guys are open with me and trust me. They know I'm not trying to shut them down, or I'm not going to go tell the coach that this guy's a band-aid or this guy's being soft for whatever reason. You know, my philosophy with injuries and athletic therapy is, especially working junior hockey here, is I want to stop little problems before they become big problems. So to do that, it's essential that I can see the guys on a daily basis, check in, see how they're doing. And, you know, the sooner you catch something, often the sooner it goes away.
I want to talk about concussions. Is that the most difficult to deal with? Is that the most difficult to diagnose? Things have changed dramatically over the years where a concussion, before you were born and I was watching the game, it wasn't near the deal that it is now. But more and more, there is so much caution. We can't see the concussion injury as such. I want your views on it, how you've dealt with it, and what's all involved when you are diagnosing it.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately for me, I'm still relatively new in the field and things haven't changed too much. You know, I remember being a kid when it was in the news a whole lot and there was the, you know, NHL enforcers are fading out of the game and that kind of thing due to concussions. So fortunately for me, the awareness has gone up in the public and the coaches and the players. People, regular people, are able to recognize them a lot more and know what to do. It's never an easy thing to deal with, especially it affects your whole body. It affects your daily life. People, you know, fans go home after the game and, you know, have a snack, go to bed, but sometimes these players are up all night because they can't sleep because their brain's messed up. We're fortunate to have good protocols from Hockey Canada, from the WHL. We have access to doctors at the games and online. We can consult with them. So I'm kind of the front line when it comes to concussion treatment and diagnosis, but I'm thankful to have, you know, people with more medical experience than me that can help us out and help make the decisions on what to do next.
What is the difference in your job when you're at home, when you've got a lot of that support staff, and on the road when there's less of it? And who's on the road with you, helping you, that, you know, how much more support is there at home compared to the road?
Yeah, road trips are always tough, no matter what level you're at. We have less staff that travel on the road. It's just myself and Dane from the support staff side of things. But like I said earlier, fortunately in the WHL, there's that standard that the home team provides doctors to both teams without bias. Mm. And they'll provide water and Gatorade and towels. And we don't have to worry about a lot of that stuff. That it's kind of, we have portable clinics on the road. And there's not too much at home that we don't have on the road other than, you know, perhaps all our gym equipment that weighs thousands of pounds. And it's fun being on the road. It is tough with the travel and the hours and packing up rink after rink. But we try to make it as smooth as possible for the players, whether home or on the road.
You're listening to CAT Scan. It's brought to you by Integris. Local speaks louder than words. Mitchell Carapita is the Prince George Cougars athletic trainer. Years ago, it was a trainer. And then, you know, as the titles change and things like that, athletic trainer. How have you seen the job sort of evolve? Or, you know, if you look at the past, what guys have done, you probably have to have a lot more knowledge now. Not that the guys back then didn't have the knowledge, but just sort of from your view, explain what you need to know now that maybe years ago they didn't have to know.
Yeah, it's interesting just looking at the history of the field. On one hand, it's becoming more specialized, and we're experts at what we do, dealing with sports injuries and, you know, musculoskeletal things, injuries to muscles, bones, ligaments, etc. But on the other hand, it's also a jack of all trades working in hockey. I'm still on the bench cleaning guys' visors if they toss one to me, and dealing with broken sticks on the bench. So I remember hearing stories of Chico when he was with the Cougars doing both jobs, equipment and athletic training.
And, yeah.
And I had a bit of that when I was with the Spruce Kings, but it's certainly a different animal. And to do it for as many years as people like he did, that's something special.
4-year course at Mount Royal. Take us through the course, how it sort of is. And just for somebody that may be thinking, I wonder if I'd be interested in that. Or even if they're not interested themselves in doing it, take us through. You register for Mount Royal. You go to the course. If you don't mind sharing, how expensive is it so people get an idea there? And how does it work year one through year four when you graduate and all that?
Yeah, the nice thing of going to Mount Royal is actually a lot of options. So most people typically take it as a 4 or 5 year degree, which is what I did in 4 years. There's also the option where people go get a kinesiology degree somewhere else in the country, and then along the way they decide that they want to specialize in athletic therapy, so they can go to Mount Royal and just take the hands-on 2 years at the end. For me, I had a feeling that it's what I wanted to do from the start, so I took a chance and went straight into the athletic therapy major. I think it was about $12,000-$13,000 a year altogether.
Yeah.
Still paying off that student loan, but
right.
The first couple years are kind of like that general kinesiology. We're learning body anatomy, body mechanics, injuries, nutrition, sports science, all those kinds of things. So it really introduces you to the field, and you can figure out, is this the type of thing I want to do, or do I want to be an accountant or in business or something? And then, you know, if you are in it for the long haul, then we start to have our emergency courses where we deal with first aid and spinal situations. And then the last 2 years are pretty similar to what I'm doing now. It's hands-on in class, practicing on our classmates, working with university teams, taping ankles and doing rehab programs, always under a supervisor. And then after you graduate, you write the exam and you're off working by yourself.
I imagine you had pretty high marks to get in. What is the standard to get in? They just don't take anybody that applies.
Yeah, it is fairly competitive. When I applied, they advised me to apply to both the kinesiology and the athletic therapy program, just in case you don't get in one. You can try and shoot for 4.0s and get in later. Our class was roughly, I think, 25, 30 people. That whittled down to about 20. So.
And what would it be, men and women, the average, how that would be?
Men and women?
Yeah.
In my class, I think it was roughly 2/3 women, which is nice to see.
Yeah.
Hockey especially is typically a male dominant field, stereotypically and literally. So you can see the next generation, there are lots of female athletic therapists working in sports, and you know, you see lots of breakthroughs lately. I remember last year there was that female athletic therapist who worked in the NHL for the LA Kings, I think. So, as for marks, it's take your sciences and health classes. I think roughly I needed 80s and 90s to get in. So definitely need good grades. But I always tell anyone going to university, if you work hard and can manage your time and, you know, just mature, that's more important than what's in your head.
Hopefully this never happens, however long you're doing the job. But anytime you're playing a sport like hockey, it can happen. And I'm talking about serious injuries. I don't believe yet you've dealt with one. Am I correct with that?
Yeah.
I mean, really serious.
Yeah, nothing I would call really serious.
What kind of preparation is that for you? Is that always something in your mind? You know, because things can happen at a moment. And again, obviously, the hope is that nothing ever happens. But you have to be prepared.
Yeah. So it's exactly as you say. We expect the worst, and then, you know, if the game goes well and no one gets hurt, it's a pleasant surprise. So we have our first responder training every 3 years as athletic therapists. Also in the WHL, just this past summer, all the athletic therapists from the teams met in Calgary, and we took a first responder refresher course together. So we actually got to practice with people who we'll be working with throughout the season. We have emergency action plans at every rink we go to. So everybody who is in the medical field there, myself, the trainer on the other bench, the equipment managers, the doctor at the game, everyone knows what their roles are when something happens. Everyone knows where to find the stretcher, who's calling 911. So we have it as rehearsed as it can be. But then when it comes to the moment, if someone is seriously injured, then you lean on your training. Fortunately for me, most trainers in the WHL have been around a lot longer than me. Some of them have dealt with those serious situations. So there's always people around. You're never alone. So
I want to know the bond between you and the 21 other athletic trainers, and maybe a little bit more specific, the other nine in the Western Conference, because you don't see the East too often. So, and I mean, you're new into it, but there has to be a special bond. Do you have very close friends? Tell us about, you know, your relationship with the same person that's doing the job with the Blazers or the Giants or the Royals or the Rockets or one of the teams. Is there that, or am I just imagining it?
No, you're totally right. It's funny. I always think it's funny seeing, you know, the BC division, the big rivalries, the hype up for the fans, and you see the players fighting and chirping each other on the ice. And honestly, for us support staff behind the bench, it's almost the opposite. We see each other so often. We build bonds and hang out around the rink and see how each other are doing, what are your Christmas plans, et cetera. Everyone, you know, no matter what happens on the ice, off the ice, we all have a job to do. We all love the game, want to have a good time. We're not trying to, you know, stab anyone else in the back and, you know, leave some rocks on their floors so they have to sharpen their skates again or anything. So, honestly, it's even before working in the Western League, I was always looking up different teams, see where I could get my foot in and stuff, because the people out here are legends. Toledo with the Blazers, Scott with Kelowna, people have been here for years. Some of them have been working in the league. Greg Mayer in Regina, I think he's been in the dub longer than I've been alive. So,
do you see yourself possibly being one of those guys that could be associated for a long, long time, either with one team or one league? Or do you sort of see yourself, you know, I want to do this and I don't mind doing it for a long time, but, you know, when I'm in my 40s, I don't necessarily see that.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in high school, when I was looking at it, the WHL was my long-term goal. I've seen, you know, there's a reason why people do it for 10, 20, 30 years. It's a good job. You can make a good living. My ultimate goal is still to get into professional hockey, whether that's American League, National Hockey League. But at the end of the day, I'm still a Western Canada kid. I love working in this league. I love being out here. So it's, I certainly wouldn't feel unfulfilled if I turned into a WHL lifer, let's say.
The goal is the NHL for all WHL players. And you sort of said yourself, that's the ultimate, that's, you know, where you would like to go. And that's obvious. How do you get there? What's the path? Have you talked to anybody about it? Have you talked to anybody that does this at the NHL level? Have you thought of that? Or have you just been so consumed right now, you know, your first year with the Cougars that, you know, you haven't thought that far ahead? Or just sort of, you know, give us your thoughts regarding that.
Yeah, I'm fortunate. Coming into the field, there's a long line of people who have made the jump from junior A to major junior to semi-professional all the way up to the NHL, and you can kind of see the template they've used, and for the most part it's not that similar than the players. You know, earn your stripes in junior hockey, get good at the job, get comfortable with it, build a good reputation, get smooth with your processes, and then, you know, same thing where players spend some time in the AHL before the NHL. That's usually what support staff like athletic trainers do. When I was in junior A, briefly, admittedly, I was looking at people who were working in the WHL, seeing what kind of certifications they had, what kind of courses they took, how long they were there. For example, I saw lots of people had their strength and conditioning certification. So this summer, that was something I focused on because I knew it would be important down the road. And, you know, 6 months later, I'm the strength and conditioning coach for the Prince George Cougars. So right now it is tough in the season when we're busy, but, you know, I've got some summer plans of taking some more courses and certifications to, you know, try and get as much experience as I can to hopefully be in pro hockey soon.
Strength and conditioning, what's all involved with that? What do you have to do in terms of that?
Yeah, so for a sport like hockey, you know, in the WHL, we play 68 games, so that is certainly pretty demanding on the body to begin with, but and guys do most of their training in the summer to get better, stronger, faster, but we always still want to do as much as we can in season so they don't lose those gains. You know, guys might be 200 pounds and feel really strong, you know, coming into training camp, but, you know, if they don't touch a weight room for a few months, pretty soon they'll be 10, 20 pounds down, not be able to lift as much, throw as much, and then you're not really getting anywhere. After 12 months, you're just treading water. So for us, it all depends on the schedule. If we're playing 4 or 5 games a week, there's no point throwing more weight on the guys, making them even more sore and tired. And when we have time, we'll try to do little lifting sessions here and there to keep their bodies fresh and primed and, you know, ready to perform on any night.
Do you ever have to go to a coach, and we'll even go back to your year with the Spurs Kings, and just say, you know, maybe they need the practice off, maybe they need a day off, or do you just sort of, I don't know if I should be telling the coach that, or would you, if you felt that, you know, there's a practice that's called for 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and they've, you know, you can sense that the energy's not there and they could use the rest instead. Have you ever had that discussion with a coach?
Yeah, we've run into that occasionally, and that's honestly a tough conversation for me to have sometimes, even though should be pretty straightforward. You know, the players always want to be in there. The coaches want them to be in there, and I want them to be in there. I hate when guys miss games due to injuries, due to illness, just as much as they do. So I kind of treat practices the same. I want to have, you know, everybody in and playing and getting better as much as they can. But you're right. Sometimes in the long run, if we have a big game coming up, there's no point wasting the last of their energy. Say they're coming off a flu or something. On some practice, and then they're not ready for the game. So, you know, just always keep the big picture in mind.
How hard is it to motivate all players to make sure they are doing their strength, conditioning, and those kinds of programs?
For the most part, it's not too difficult these days. Just the 20 years ago, 10 years ago, sure, but over the years, it's become expected in all levels of hockey that people are training in season and getting better. People do in the NHL, and they play even more games than us. So players know they need it to get better. And, you know, it's always, for me, it's always the tough balance of things that we can do as a team together. And, you know, just for the sake of time, if I'm dealing with injured guys, I also got to make a workout plan. So sometimes it can't be that specific to each person, but then there's also guys who maybe don't play as much as others, or they have different goals and they really want to put on some weight or get stronger. So there's always that balance of workouts we're doing as a team, and then making sure guys are doing things on their own if they want, focusing on certain things that they need to improve. And, you know, it's never ending cycle of scheduling and checking in and adjusting. So
has there been a game this season, and if you want to reference it, by all means, where the game ended and it's like, wow, nobody got injured, nobody is sick, It was like they didn't even play. They may have played well, right? But I'm just saying that they you got away with, whew, my job was easy tonight. Has that happened?
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, if you can go to a hockey game or a sporting event and don't notice the athletic therapist, then that means that our night's going pretty well.
Right. How often does that happen?
Lately, not so much. Our schedule's gotten a little dense. People are more banged up. But early on in the season, we were only playing a couple times a week. I remember there were some times where I'd send off my injury report and would have nothing to report. Things were going well. No one was sick. And, you know, that's my ultimate goal. We can have everybody ready for a game, everybody feeling good and performing well, then now that's all you can ask for.
You mentioned injury report. What's all that about? Who do you send that to? Who sees it? When do you write this up, and how specific are you?
Yeah, so every day I'll put together an injury report, mainly for the coaches, also for some of our owners. They're interested in seeing how the team's doing, how we're doing health-wise, who's available, why guys are out of the lineup. Practice days, I'll usually send it after everyone goes home, check in with the guys, see who's sick, who's hurt, who can play tomorrow, where guys are at in their recovery. After games, sometimes we don't get out of the rinks till midnight, and you know, you're still waiting to hear back from a doctor what they have to say. So before I go to bed, I usually try to just let everyone know who's involved, what the state of the team is like, who's going to be ready tomorrow, just so there's no surprises in the morning.
So just as an example, we won't use a real name or anything like that, but let's say there was a John Smith that was playing, and you were to write John Smith down, rib injury day to day, concussion, let's monitor him. Like what would you say for a John Smith, a fictitious player, but a real report?
Yeah, not too much more than that. I mean, I keep detailed notes and for myself and, you know, what I do with guys just for our documentation purposes, but for the coaches, it's some of that would be a lot too much detail for them. So just to the basics, what their injury is, how long they're expected to be out for, and then a very brief thing about what they were doing today. They got on the ice by themselves, went well, tomorrow he should be able to skate with the team, things like that. Anything else, the details of specific drills and exercises, I usually just keep to myself unless someone asks for it.
What about protocols? The media, the public, we don't find out about anything. We're told basically nothing other than they're in the lineup, they're out of the lineup. We may get an upper body injury or lower body injury, which tells us nothing. What are you told to make sure stays private, and how does that protocol work?
Well, at its core, it's mainly keep things in-house. I'll tell who needs to know things, who needs to know certain things, what they need to know, coaches, players, parents, family. You've never seen an athletic therapist talking to the media for a reason,
right, yeah.
About specific injuries. So, you know, if the team wants to release something about, you know, a certain player, say they're expected to be out for a couple months and wish them a good recovery, that's fine. That's not up to me to say. At the end of the day, I am a health professional, and the information we deal with is private health information. So, you know, if the player's okay letting something into the news and the team's okay with it, then, you know, that's up to them. But for me, it's mostly just stay in the shadows and keep things going well.
So, obviously, Cole Waldie's a really good friend of yours. He was with the Prince George Spruce Kings when you were there. He's closely with the team and all those kinds of things. So, will you even keep information from him, or is he part of that in-group that knows and he knows not to release it, or do you keep it even from, you know, as close as somebody like that?
I will give him updates once in a while to, you know, who's going to be, just to give him a heads up on who's going to be in the lineup, who's out of the lineup. And we have a good relationship, like you said, him yeah. coming to the Cougars with me made the transition a whole lot easier, having a familiar face. But, you know, he's by the same protocols as me. If there's too much detail, is probably a bad thing. The fans on the broadcast, they can know if someone's not playing, if they have the flu, but, you know, anything more than that could be detrimental to the team. Maybe the opponents know someone has a bad knee and they start targeting that knee. That's the worst case scenario. So
you are specifically told, is it by the team or by the league, don't share information?
More so by the team, but, you know, it's almost at all levels. The league has protocols and standards that everyone has to abide by. Don't do things that are detrimental to the league. pissing off a player and telling the whole world what's wrong with them and how long they're going to be out for, that might be detrimental to the league and their reputation with players. Our athletic therapy associations also have rules on what we're allowed to share and what we're not. So, you know, when in doubt, usually keep your mouth shut.
What goes on the bus stays on the bus.
Exactly.
What about the mood when you're on the bus with the team? Team wins on the road. What's it like? Team loses on the road. What's it like? Would you be able to tell? Would I be able to tell, not knowing the result? And let's say the bus is just heading out and stops to say we're going to pick up Hartley, and you know the game has just ended. Would I be able to get on that bus without knowing a result and be able to tell whether the team won or lost?
I'd say so for sure.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, they're teenage boys, so you know, a win is a win. It always feels good. They're celebrating, they're laughing, telling jokes. But then again, you know, there's 68 games, you're bound to lose some. So those bus rides are usually a lot quieter. People going to bed early, just texting their parents. No music in the locker room after the game. Not a whole lot of laughing on the bus, and it's a bit more somber. And you know, we're just trying to get on to the next one. And
how much are you fan, and how do you separate that?
Yeah, coming into athletic therapy, it was because I love sports. I love watching sports. It's, you know, it's great that I can make a living technically watching sports. But at the end of the day, like, I am a medical professional, so, you know, health and safety is more important than the scoreboard. If a visiting player gets hurt and their athletic therapist needs some help, I'm going to go help them, no question. That being said, I am around the team every day. I love it when we win. I'm happier. The players are happier. It feels good to do well. So I always want to see them succeed, whether that's goals and points or, you know, coming back from an injury. Sometimes for me, that feels like a win. Some guy's been out for 2 weeks, and he's been pushing hard every day behind the scenes, and then he's finally back in the lineup. To me, that feels like a win. So
you ever feel like barking at referees or anything like that, or getting, or do you just say, no, I can't, even if I want to say something, I just have to, you know, button up?
Definitely tempting sometimes, especially sometimes the coaches get a little fired up and we're players, and you know, generally me and Dane on the bench are the ones who are supposed to be a bit more composed and quiet and just do your job and don't cause a scene, because you know, that's what the show is for. The players on the ice decide the game, not us. And
but you can let your emotions get out, though, if the Cougars score in overtime and just go crazy?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean,
I still remember with the Spruce Kings last year, overtime winner in the first round in Cranbrook, and we've had some big games this year with the Cougars, overtime winners, shootout winners, and you know, it is fun. You know, no one's getting hurt. You have a close game and overtime win. It's
You feel that energy.
You feel the energy off the arena, off of the players, off of the coaches, and it feels good.
Is there anything that we haven't discussed yet that you think would be interesting, or, you know, a behind-the-scenes story of what an athletic trainer does at the WHL level?
Well, I think for most people, the stereotype, and you know, myself included, when I was a kid, I never knew athletic therapists or had, you know, a rehab and saw someone. So, you know, the stereotype is always taping ankles or, you know, giving people massages, which certainly is sometimes, but in the WHL and Junior A especially, there's a lot more to it than most people would imagine. I'm the same guy putting Band-Aids on people as, you know, rubbing out their back after a game. I go to Costco and pick up food for the players. They can have pregame snacks and intermission snacks. Making phone calls and scheduling appointments and, you know, vacuuming the gym gets a little dirty. There's a whole lot to it, to keeping things running smoothly, making it so the players don't have to worry about those things. They shouldn't be, oh, we're down a goal, but I'm starving. I don't have the energy for this. It's our job as support staff to put the pieces in place to help the players succeed and the coaches and everybody have as smooth a time as possible at the rink and only have to worry about hockey.
You have to wear gloves, I guess, at all times and protocols, you know, way the COVID was and people concerned about, you know, blood and those kinds of things. how do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm always wearing gloves. It's hockey, it's a collision sport, not a contact sport, so anything can happen. As for COVID, there was a lot of COVID protocols last year, not so much this year. I was in my last year of university during most of it, so I wasn't in hockey at the time and got to miss the bubble seasons, but you know, I still had the mask seasons and the hand sanitizer everywhere and guys staying home for 5 to 7 days. So there's still a lot of that. It's good habits just to not get sick in general. And I mean, as you saw from our recent road trip, when a flu goes through a team, that affects the win column. There's, at the end of the day, people being injured negatively hurts the team. If your best players aren't in the lineup, then your team has a less chance of winning. So keeping guys healthy, not sick, whether it's a cold or flu or COVID, it's all important and all to the success of the team.
The best and worst part of the job?
Best part of the job is it's fun. Like I said a million times, I love sports. I love fitness. I love hockey. It's fun being around with the guys. Worst part of the job, there's not much other than you work a lot of long hours, regular hours. I think there was one time last year where I counted my hours. I think it was 60 or 70 on a regular week. This year I haven't even bothered. but, you know, it's long hours, but it's fun hours. It doesn't feel like work. I'm at the rink for 10, 12 hours a day on average, but I love what I do. And
you may not want to say that it doesn't feel like work too loud, because at some point you're going to need a raise. They're going to say, well, you don't work, right? So you got to be a little bit careful in terms of that. What about the off season then? Like, do you get 3 full months off? How does that work?
Yeah, so my contract is for the whole year. We do have obviously an off season just like the players do. That being said, I'm still a employee of the team, so I'll be checking in with the guys and seeing how their summer training's going, checking with their strength coaches. If there is an injury, I'd certainly love for them to keep me in the loop and see if there's any way I can help and how that'll affect their return in the fall. This past summer, that's when I usually focus on my personal development. That's when I'm taking classes and trying to get more certifications. I think I said this past summer, I've focused more on the strength and conditioning. This upcoming summer, my goal is to get my American Athletic Therapy certification so I can work in the professional leagues, and most professional teams are in the States. Take little conferences and courses here and there. Every year there's a big hockey trainer conference in the southern states. This year it's in Phoenix, and I'm excited to go to that and network and meet how the pros do it. There's guys from the NHL there, AHL there, where I want to be, so I'd love to pick their brain and, you know, see how they got there.
Right. So, you know, we hear coach, they get a 3-year contract, things like that, or assistant coach or general manager. How does it work with you? Did you start on, you get a 2-year deal, 3-year deal, 5-year deal, 1 year? How does that work?
My contract this past season when I got the job was 1 year, but I wasn't in a position to argue. It was a dream come true. I wanted to work in the Dub for a long time, and you know, to come after only 1 year of Junior A was a surprise to me. It was a blessing for me. So when it comes time, we'll talk about my future up here, but I've been in PG for a couple of years now, and I love it.
Yeah, and you are, you know, you're certainly in a very, very key position with the team, sort of behind the scenes. And is that the way you sort of like it, the behind the scenes, you know, or do you think that, you know, athletic trainers may or should get a little bit more attention?
Sometimes it's fun to be in the spotlight. Like, I'm happy to come on the show and talk about what I do just to raise public awareness. That's a big thing of athletic therapy in general. We're trying to be a more well-recognized field. But again, if there's too much attention, that probably means there's a lot of injuries and things aren't going well. So I call it the happy balance. If I'm happy to do my job, the players know who I am, they know what I do, and you know, if everybody's playing, then no one's wondering who's the athletic therapist, and you know, maybe he's not very good at his job because everyone's hurt all the time. So,
well, we do know you're doing very well with the Prince George Cougars. We will have you back on another podcast, especially as you get more, you know, as the season winds down, and you know, you can have a chance to sort of reflect on 1 year to the next and how it all goes. But I really appreciate your time today. I think you've given a really good insight as to what a key role and what's all involved with that.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You bet. Mitchell Carapita is the Prince George Cougars athletic trainer. You've been listening to CAT Scan, brought to you by Integris. Local speaks louder than words.